Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in since they going back to showing action tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the anime action fan sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I'm, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis. And I welcome you to episode 94 of The Prerogative. We continue Superhero Month with a series that, you know, we have to get in the Wayback Machine for, you know, a series that's just filled with my favorite thing in the world. You know, it's a thing, you know, my shelves are filled with it, with the figures and all the different anime I have and everything. And, oh God, you know, it's just my favorite thing in the world. You know what it is. Fan service! Oh, how I love fan service and series that are filled with fan service. Nice, juicy, plump fan service. It just fills my heart with glee. So, I have to say, this series was just so much fun to watch. I am, of course, talking about Spider-Man and his amazing friends. Well, you know, we actually have no emails or comments or anything to talk about this week, so let's get right into the review as well. Wait, what's that I hear? It's so faint. It's almost as if a cry of thousands of people in pain have cried out at once. It's very faint. I can almost hear it. Wait, one second. Huh? It's very faint, but it seems as if, like, thousands of souls are seemingly screaming. There is no fan service in Amazing Spider-Man and his friends. There's no boobies, there's no nudity or anything. Oh, alas, you poor souls. I guess before we get into the series, I have to explain fan service once again, because this whole bit was created as an excuse to talk about it. This series, Amazing Spider-Man and his, or Spider-Man and his amazing friends, excuse me, as I said, has tons of fan service. Because, you know, they go out, they meet other superheroes. It's all the fun of the mixture of the Marvel Universe, which is essentially fan service. You know, fan service, as it is known as today, is so commonly misunderstood as, well, there's fan service. Oh, so there's boobies and there's sexualization of women. You know, regardless of the fact that it could also be the sexualization of men, but we're not going to get into that part here. But, you know, the whole sexual side, you know, when somebody says, oh, it's a fan service show, people think of Iitosen, they think of High School DxD, they think of all these, you know, all the animes that have it as well, regardless of whether there's American programs that have sort of the sexual fan service as well. But fan service really means things that aren't necessarily there for the plot. They add, you know, fan service adds character. Fan service adds detail to sort of the back information and can help tell certain little aspects of the story. They can tell the backstory of the world that the character's in. So while the fan service, you know, even sexual fan service does that. So the fact is, while fan service isn't necessary, it's an important thing to any program, any movie, any television, any intellectual entertainment property, even in comic books and books and such, to sort of, because they are the details of the world that you are in. So in this case, you know, having Spider-Man, Firestar, and Iceman meet up with, you know, the X-Men. And, you know, they, you know, in the case of that being the plot of that episode, and showing all the different X-Men and having them in action is not necessarily necessary. Of course, it's also there to pad out the show in some cases, but, you know, again, it fills out that world. It's giving detail to that world. They're in the world of the mutants in that episode. The world of the seven little superheroes, which is one of my particular favorite episodes. You know, where you have Shauna the She-Devil, and I'm blanking on his name. Darn it, let me find it. Oh, darn. Hopefully it's here. But you have Captain America, you have Doctor Strange, you have, and I can't find it for the life of me, I apologize, the Neo Marina. Darn it, I'm blanking on the name of that character, and sucks. You know the character I'm talking about, right? Namor, there it is. I'm looking down the cast list trying to find it. Namor. Somewhere, Spidey Dude, Donovan Morgan Grant, and George Berryman all are getting in their car and heading to New Jersey to, you know, pull separate Berrymans. but, you know, that's the whole point is, it is about, you know, fan service is about giving detail to the world. Fan service isn't necessarily important to the story being told. It is extra and it's not needed, but at the same point in time, it's a very important aspect to the intellectual property, as I said. It provides that detail to the backstory, where the backstory of the world, the situation they're in, whatever, and mind you, to the comedy, also sometimes being fun Easter eggs to the story. You know, for instance, when they have, you know, when Spider-Man lands on a billboard and it's, you know, such and such book as written by Stan Lee. A little Easter egg. A little bit of fan service that's fun. Not necessarily needed, but again, adds to the sort of feel of the show. So, fan service, even though we think about it these days as just the sexual kind, that is seen in things like Oxytocin and things like Mock and Kai, and other shows like that, and more importantly, think of it as something that's only in anime. It's something that lies in all of animation. Hell, it's something that lies in all of intellectual entertainment, both live action, animated movies and television, books, comic books, anything. The thing about fan service is that when it's good, it's an organic part of the story, as I think we'll see here. It really stands out when it's not organic. And, of course, that's always up to debate sometimes, especially with sexual fan service. Again, that is a completely different topic for a different series, because there is no sexual fan service here. Well, okay, there is no sexual fan service here. I'm not going to get into the, because I'm probably going to get me in enough trouble as it is. I'm sure a couple of my friends are going to be emailing like, what are you talking about? You don't know what you're talking about. Story of my life. I study and do all this research only to be told I'm completely wrong. But I digress. Why don't we get right into the series, shall we? You know, by the way, an interesting note that I actually did not know until doing the research for this series, and I didn't realize I didn't know this, because I've seen her in the comics before, but Firestar is actually an original creation of this series. And she became so popular that they introduced her into the comics in Uncanny X-Men 193 in 1985, a May issue, as part of the members of the Hellions, which is a group of teenage mutants who were rivals to the New Mutants, which was a group of teenage mutants under the tutelage of Charles Xavier. The Hellions were led by Frost. So, I guess you can say that Firestar is the original Harley Quinn. And thank you to all those who get that joke. But I digress, let's get into the series proper, shall we? Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends is the story of Peter Parker, a.k.a. the Amazing Spider-Man, the mutant Bobby Drake, a.k.a. Iceman, and the mutant Angelica Jones, a.k.a. Firestar, who are all college students at Empire State University. After working together to defeat the Beetle and recovering from the power booster that he stole from Tony Stark, a.k.a. Iron Man, the trio decide to team up permanently as the Spider Friends, and they live together in Peter's Aunt May's home with her and her pet dog, Miss Lyne, who is adopted from Firestar. Together, the superheroes battle with various supervillains, sometimes with the help of other superheroes. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. So, let's go for it!
Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, Iceman and Firestar. Amazing Friends.
And welcome back, and let's get right into it, as we always do with music. Again, I'm going to sort of apologize right now. You know, I had a bit of the padding there at the beginning. You know, I don't know how long this episode, this may be one of those sort of short, under an hour episodes, to which thousands of souls around the world are like, yes, yes, yes! No more 3-hour epics! Not that there isn't a lot to talk about, but it's pretty quick and self-explanatory and probably doesn't need a lot to explain. And I think music is one of them. Music is pretty simple. You know, the fact of the matter is, I absolutely enjoyed the music. The intro theme is just a great sort of classic cartoon intro theme. It's catchy, it's fun, it's got that quick, you know, da-na-na-na. Da-na-na-da. And, you know, the thing is, it actually does fit sort of Spider-Man's feel. You know, when you think about a Spider-Man theme, that sort of jaunty, sort of very jazzy theme is very typical of what you sort of hear. Even if you listen, because I can speak today, of Danny Elfman's theme from the Spider-Man trilogy, to an extent, even Hans Zimmer's theme, and the new Amazing, there's a bit of that jaunchiness. As much as they're trying to be, oh, we're deep and dark and awful, there's still that sort of jazziness to it in places. That is an essential part of, you know, who Spider-Man is, which is completely different from sort of the dark tonal brass that you hear with somebody like Batman, or the bright brass you would hear with Superman. Spider-Man's always had sort of that jazzy percussion that's, I think, been essential to sort of his themes. You know, I think a perfect example of this is the Spectacular Spider-Man series. You know, listen to that intro theme. Listen how sort of, as much as it is a sort of rock track, there's a sort of jazzy element to it that just you know, the upbeat, the jazziness to the way the melody goes, the way, you know, the percussion is going, the way it's being led, there is a jazziness to it that, again, is essential. We hear it here in this intro theme. And, you know, a lot of, I don't know how many tracks were a part of this series. I think there were three core ones that were continuously used throughout the series. And all of them were good. They were fun tracks. You know, by themselves, I enjoyed them immensely. They were fun little tunes. And I guess the only criticism of the music is that I wish they would have done a better job of incorporating those tunes, which were fun, enjoyable, and good, into the correct moments. Because it's very spotty in the series. You know, there are times where they're fighting, they have that sort of tune that I'm blanking on it now, and I was just listening to it about 2 hours ago. But they'll have an action which works very well, and it's perfectly placed. But sometimes they'll have tunes in places that don't work. The one that jumps out to mind is they had sort of that villainous, like, oh my god, something about to happen theme that is part of the series, and it's at the end, and it's I remember the episode, it's episode 2 of season 2, where they talk about Peter Parker's origin, and, you know, Aunt May had been unfortunately put in the hospital because Peter was Spider-Man, and, you know, she gets out, and she's like, oh, I was so wrong about that Spider-Man character, and of course, Peter Parker kisses her, he's like, what was that for, Peter? I'm like, oh, let's just imagine that was a kiss from Spider-Man for thanking you, for understanding him. And then it goes into this sort of dark villain theme, like, oh, so, like, Aunt May knows he's Spider-Man. Of course, nothing happens to it. This is a cartoon, which means that the story is always going to be back to where the status quo started at the beginning of the episode. That being said, it's, I don't understand why that theme was there. You could have, the other two themes, or like the very jauncey theme, is what they should have put there. Maybe it was bad editing and somebody accidentally put the wrong theme there and didn't check it before they went out. But it's like, you have several cases like that throughout the series. I mean, mind you, this is 1980s and this is a Marvel production. It's done in-house by Marvel. Because the research I've done, I haven't been able to find if there was anybody else a part of it. It just says production company was Marvel Productions. I'm sure it was probably outsourced to Japan or somewhere else for a lot of it. And then Marvel just takes, you know, credit. You know, because again, that's what it was in the 80s. But yeah, it's just that didn't really fit in that scene, and there are several scenes like that to where it seems like they have the wrong music for that scene. But when they have the right music for the scene, it works extremely well. So again, it's that hit and miss aspect of it. They have good tunes, it's just sometimes they don't use it in the right place. With that, let's move on to animation. And of course, the animation style is, it's a sort of cross. I mean, it's the traditional sort of cartoon aspect that we were used to, late 70s, early 80s. You know, if you're a fan of all animation, or even that period of animation, you know, you understand what I'm talking about. The very simple lines, the very, you know, cartoon animation. Simple line work, simple shapes, not a lot of shadow. And yet, you know, Toon Set can be very detailed in a lot of places. I was very impressed by the animation for being 1980. At least the city seemed to have, you know, it was one of those animations that had a city setting and evolved a lot of detail. And that's the other thing is, again, being that it was Marvel Productions, it seemed like a lot of the locations were taken straight out of Marvel Comics. And so, to an extent, it is almost that, you know, tracing thing. I'm blanking on the name of the technique. I apologize. That was done, of course, in the 60s and stuff. But, you know, still, it works extremely well here. The character designs, really well done. I mean, Spider-Man's character design is spot on. Peter Parker, you know, again, jumping right out of the comics. It looked like Peter Parker from the comics. Bobby Drake looked straight out of the comics from what I've seen of his character. Because I've read a couple issues from the late 70s, early 80s involving his character. And, of course, his Iceman looked exactly like what Iceman is. You know, when you see Iceman on that robot chicken bit to where, you know, him and his wife had a fight and, like, then what were you doing at the gay theater? Yeah, and it shows his you know, ice toboggan leading from a all gay triple X theater. It's like, well, at least they touched me. Oh yeah, walk away. Poor Iceman. That may be that may be his most well known. That must be what he most well known these days for people who haven't read comics. For the hipster crowd, that's all they may know about him. And that's sad. It really is. Poor Iceman. poor Iceman. Damn you, Seth Green. But no, his character design... Wait, I was like, where was I? Yeah, his character design is straight out of the comics as well. And, you know, Spider-Man, his costume, very... mid-1970s, early 80s Spider-Man design. I mean, obviously, Stan Lee had a big hand in this. I'm sure he made sure it was correct. I want to say it resembles the Spider-Man from the Gary Conway run, which I'm trying to remember. I believe he ended in... Spidey Dude will probably email me and tell me exactly when it ended. I want to say it stopped, or his run stopped somewhere in the mid-70s. Because, again, he did the Death of Gwen Stacy, which was 1972. Not that that, you know, saying that comic spoils anything that's recently happened. I am an evil, evil, evil man. Yeah. Anyhow, and anyways, no, I thought extremely well. And the same goes for pretty much all the Marvel comic book characters who weren't original characters. Straight out of the comics, pretty much the design was mid-70s, early 80s. I mean, there's a couple original characters. You know, Video Man, which is, you know, is both a villain and a hero at a time. And again, that sort of flat, sort of very 1980s arcade look, I very much liked. Lightwave, I thought, looked interesting with the helmet. It looked like she stepped out of Tron, and that's what I kept thinking. But, you know, Tron before Tron. but I thought she looked very interesting. And the other sort of original characters throughout the series looks well. You know, that leaves us to Firestar. And again, I really did like Firestar's appearance. I love the color scheme, the yellow. I love how in both the you know, the wrist area and the ankle area, you had that, you know, her boots and gloves are red. And then there's the orange, yellow, and then into the yellow of her outfit. And of course, the red mask. I love that her mask... I kept looking at it, and like, that's supposed to be a bird. It's almost as if, you know, the way her mask was pointy and had that little point there and then down, as if that was supposed to be a bird, like, sort of representing the phoenix. That's what I kept thinking. So I thought her look was a great look. I loved the color scheme. And again, it created this great color contrast between the characters, you know, between Spider-Man, Iceman, and Firestar. You know, Firestar, you had the bright yellows and red and orange. You know, Iceman was the white, and then you had the darker colors of darker red and darker blue of Spider-Man. And I thought it created a great color contrast between the characters. The action animation was very, very well done. Again, it feels straight out of the comics, and it's very traditional of sort of the action animation you would see of cartoons of this time. Same point, extremely well done. Again, I thought some of the best animation was with Firestar. Again, her character being able to fly and use fire and everything allowed for a lot of great visuals through the action animation. And the fact is, all of it flowed and all of it worked very well. It felt like Spider-Man was swinging through the city. It felt like you were, to an extent, reading a comic book. And that, I think, was the essential aspect of the show, of making it feel like it was a comic book. For the action animation to feel like it's the same type of stuff that you would see from the comic book, again, fits the theme of the show. Then we have the backgrounds. And again, seemingly jumping right out of the page. You know, whether they be showing Asgard, whether they're in the Antarctic, New York, the desert, Hollywood. Because probably the best episode of this series is the Hollywood, Spidey Goes to Hollywood episode involving the Hulk. If I remember right, that is one of my friends, Brad Douglas's favorite episodes. It was very enjoyable. The backgrounds all seemingly, again, jumped out of the comics themselves. I thought were extremely well done. And the special effects were what they were. Special effects, I don't think, were a big thing. They were very simple. You know, snow, you put the pattern on the program, and there's the special effects. So, it was very traditional for what cartoons were as far as special effects in the 1980s. You know, good for what they were. I don't think special effects of early animation have aged all too well. Or at least the special effects dating from the 50s to the 80s. I don't think special effects would really evolve into being as good as they are in some cases till about the mid to late 80s. That's it for animation. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get into acting and into story. So I'll be right back, folks.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I am a terrible geek. I don't watch Doctor Who, I don't care for anime, I've never seen any of the Harry Potter films, much less read the books. I like Star Wars and Star Trek okay, but I've never really ventured far into the extended universes of either property. Hell, I have never even watched a single episode of The Walking Dead. So what do I like?
Comic books.
I have been reading and collecting comic books since 1987, and I have been a fan of superheroes for as long as I can remember. Some would consider this a hobby, but I prefer to look at it as what it truly is, a crippling addiction that I may never recover from. To deal with this borderline personality disorder, I started a podcast in 2007 called
Views from Long Lost.
Every 2 weeks, or so, depending on real life, I pick a particular series, or issue, or character, or whatever to talk about, and then I talk about them, because that's kind of the point of a podcast. Sometimes I'm alone. Sometimes I have a guest, like my semi-regular co-host, the Irredeemable Shag, or my other semi-regular co-host, Thomas DJ, or with another friend from the podcasting world. The show is located at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, and from there you can find the iTunes link, the email address, as well as the backlog of episodes.
Views from the Long Box.
A podcast about comics, or a desperate cry for help? You decide. Every other Tuesday, or so, depending on real life. At www.viewsfromthelongbox.com.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be! It's still going up!
325 manga chapters.
You acted as if but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu. The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
Gathered together from the far reaches of the internet, are assembled a network of podcasts dedicated to the first and greatest superhero, Superman. The Superman Podcast Network is dedicated to covering all aspects of the Superman legend, featuring
The Thrilling Adventures of Superman,
Golden Age Superman,
The Superman Fan Podcast,
Superman in the Bronze Age,
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast,
The Schuster Herald Podcast,
It's Superman,
The Carazerald Podcast,
The Amateur Steel, a John Henry Allen podcast,
The World's Best Podcast,
and
Radio KAL from SupermanHomepage.com.
Join hosts
Michael Bradley,
John Wilson,
Billy Hogan,
Charlie Niemeyer,
J. David Weider,
Jeffrey Taylor,
Michael Bailey,
Scott Gardner,
Sam Rizzo,
Danny Sapp,
Matthew Epps,
I'm Isaac,
I'm Adam,
Dave Yunus, and co-host Scotty V
at supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
And welcome back, and let's get right into it with acting. So that means it's time to go over our cast list. We have Dan Givzon as Peter Parker and Spider-Man. He will also voice Zoltan Amadeus in / the Arachnoid. We then have Frank Wechsler as Bobby Drake / Iceman. He also voices Angelica's dad, Flash Thompson, Francine Bite / Video Man, Matt Murdock, of course, Miss Lyon, because again, this is Frank Wechsler. You know, in the case of, hey, we have an animal character, you know, what do we get? Do we get Frank or do we get the animal? Let's get Frank. He takes direction better. And of course, he also voices Uncle Ben. By the way, I forgot to add the legendary Frank Wechsler. Kathy Garver voices Angelica Jones / Firestar. June Foray, who is the first, you know, voice, when I heard her, I noticed right off the bat, I'm like, holy shit, it's Grandma from Looney Tunes. Or Granny, excuse me, from Looney Tunes. But here, June Foray voices Aunt May. I didn't think we'd be seeing June Foray so soon after Mulan. I was surprised. I did not remember June Foray as Aunt May in this series. Of course, June Foray, as I aforementioned, Granny from Looney Tunes. Announcer in season one was Dick Tufeld. Stan Lee was the narrator for season two and three, being added into season one. And I guess the last big one is William Woodson as J. Jonah Jameson, because we always have to let that known. Some other notables, we have Michael Bell as Dr. Octopus, William Cartway as Angel, Hans Corride as the Chameleon, George DiCenzo as Captain America, Stanley Jones as Dean Wilmer, Dracula, Cyclops, Nightcrawler, and Professor X. You have Annie Lockhart as Honey Dove and Storm. Dennis Marks as Dr. Fantuxis and the Green Goblin. William H. Marshall as Juggernaut and Tony Stark. Alvin Melvin as Electro. Shepard Malkin as Dr. Doom. Gary Owens as Namor. Robert Ridgely as Kraven the Hunter. You have Michael Rye as Magneto. Janet Waldo as Shauna the Sea Devil and Zalnar the Ice Giant. John Stephenson as Colossus, Eric the Viking, Loki, Mordred, Shocker, Thunderbird, and Ymir. There are two more voices I want to talk about. One, and I can't believe I didn't recognize it was him in all three of these characters that he voices. But holy shit, it's him. You have Peter Cullen as Bruce Banner / the Hulk, Mysterio, and the Red Skull. I so did not catch that was him. I guess this was like early on in his career and he didn't have that distinctness yet in the voice that would, I guess, be obvious when, you know, he voices Optimus Prime. Or maybe, again, it was there. Again, he's just that damn good of a goddamn actor that I didn't recognize him, and God bless that, sir. Or as, you know, again, Scott McNeil once said, you know, when Peter Cullen walks into the room, you feel like there's a wave of whales crashing down you of the awesomeness, or something along those lines. The other thing is that there's three names, and again, I'm going off Wikipedia here, there are three names that don't have characters behind them. Alan Dinehart, Michael Evans, and John Hamer. One of these motherfuckers voiced Wolverine in the third episode of Season 2, which went over Firestar's origin. The reason I bring this up is one of them motherfuckers gave him an Aussie accent. And I'm listening to it going, how fortuitous of them to predict. Because, let's see, let us count the ways. You had Scott McNeil in X-Men Evolution. Canadian and Aussie. You have, oh god, I cannot believe I'm blanking on his. And he was just on Raw. Which, by the way, you want to see an absolute hilarious moment. Yeah, as I look it up and stall for time. But a couple weeks, on Raw, weeks ago on Raw, as I'm looking. Yes, I'm stalling for time because, god damn it, I can't remember the name. Where are you? Hugh Jackman, thank you. And I thought this episode was going to go without a hitch. But Hugh Jackman was on Raw a couple weeks ago. And a heel character by the name of Damian Sandow, the greatest wrestler who ever lived. Okay, that's somebody else's gimmick. I consider him one of the greats. He's awesome. He never breaks character. But to get a Hugh Jackman and Dolph Ziggler, who he's having a feud with, he comes out dressed as Magneto. And not only on Raw, but then on SmackDown, wrestles as Magneto. It was one of the most hilarious things. God bless that man. And all of me and my wrestling fans had to say is, whose face did you hit with your cock to get in trouble? to quote TWK and Maddie J. Again, completely off topic. But, you know, Hugh Jackman, Scott McNeil, oh, God, I'm blanking on names now. Wonderful. E-voices. And I shouldn't remember off the top of my head. That's not the point. I'm getting so off topic here, and I apologize. The point is, I thought it was very fortuitous and hilarious that they gave him an Aussie accent, considering who will play him in the future, which is predominantly people who were born from Australia. I just found that funny. Personally. And completely off topic. No, because we need a part of the episode where Tom goes off topic and completely blanks on every name. Any dang how. Let's go over our voice cast here. I thought Dan Givzon done an absolutely excellent job as Peter Parker. You know, again, it had the right mannerisms and everything, and he was perfect as the character. Again, Frank Welker, legend. He was just wonderful as Bobby Drake. Again, he has that great comedic timing. You know, again, obviously brought over from, you know, his Scooby-Doo days. I thought, you know, he did an absolutely wonderful job. Again, remember Frank Welker was Scooby-Doo. Ooby-ooby-oo! And, you know, Fred. And, you know, that's the thing. There was a bit of Fred in Bobby Drake there. I could hear it. You had, you know, and then Kathy Garver, I thought, did an absolutely excellent job as Firestar. Again, great voice and everything. You just go over. You know, I don't think she did much voice work outside. I mean, she had a lot of the Scooby-Doo and the typical things. I think Firestar was probably her big appearance there. Or at least that's what I'm seeing here. But she did a great job as Firestar. Very wonderful, very enjoyable. Again, sort of playing the straight man to Bobby Drake and doing it very, very well in the series. And then, of course, June Foray as Aunt May. What more can I say? She's using her granny voice. She plays the character well, but really the charm of it is that it's Granny from Looney Tunes. To an extent, it's fan service in itself. It's like, it's Granny! plays Aunt May perfectly to the T. So overall, I thought the acting was done extremely well. I guess that brings us to our story. And again, this is the typical sort of cartoon series, very episodic plot of Spider-Man's amazing friends. The main concept is that him and his friends face off with villains, sometimes getting help with other heroes, beating villains from across the Marvel Universe, not just from Spider-Man's rogues gallery. Sometimes, you know, like, there's a episode where they're in a prison, they have to face off against Magneto, where they have to, you know, face, there's an episode where they have to face Loki, there's an episode where they have to face against Mordred, who is the villain for the Black Knight. Let me see if I can find him here and bring him up. I can't. Doesn't seem to be here. Obviously, he was, they don't have anything to him. Wonderful. But they would have other, you know, there's the Red Skull, for instance. Though, they do have a lot of, you know, Spider-Man's rogue gallery. Dr. Octopus, Green Goblin, Mysterio, Kraven, Electro, Shocker, are all here. So, again, there's that very simple plot to it. It's very episodic, and it works very well. Part of the reason I think it works very well is, again, they keep it simple. As I always talk about, keep it simple. And in this case, I think the plot is kept very simple. There's one issue with the story, and that's the pacing issue. In a lot of the episodes, it feels like it almost goes on forever. You know, that's the one thing is every episode, the one bad thing I can say about this series is that it just felt like it's going on forever. It's like this should have been ended by now. You know, it feels like there was a lot of padding in each episode. There are certain episodes where it doesn't feel that way. A lot of the three origin episodes, which is season two, didn't feel that way. But there was in a lot of episodes, there felt like there was a lot of padding. And I'm like, where am I again? Isn't it over? I'm like, wait a minute, this was 24 minutes? It didn't feel like 24 minutes. It felt more like 40. So that's the one issue with the episodic aspect of it. But for the most part, it does work. You know, because it has the standard three-part act, you know, the beginning, the middle, the end, regardless of the pacing issues and the padding. And again, it keeps the plot simple. Here's the villain of the day, and they have to go stop the villain of the day, sometimes with the help of another hero. So that works pretty well. One aspect that really makes it work is the fan service. And there's a reason I wanted to talk about it at the beginning of this episode. Because, again, the fan service is essential here. You know, when you have the episode, for instance, where they have to face off against Loki and they need Thor's help. And they're all in Thor's world. And there's so much fan service brought over from the Thor comics into that episode. All that fan service, again, helps create the world. It creates the episode and gives the episode its backbone. Yeah. The same can be said when they go into Captain America's world and all the other worlds of other superheroes. Again, all that fan service works well. Showing off different heroes' powers. You know, that sort of... Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, in its essential form, is the animated version of Marvel Team-Up. Just, you know, instead of it always being completely different heroes, it's Marvel Team-Up where it's Spider-Man, His Amazing Friends, teaming up with who today? Sometimes they don't have anybody, it's just them by themselves, but for the most part, they'll have somebody who's helping them who's from the Marvel Universe, or the face of villain outside of their rogues gallery of the Marvel Universe. It is essentially Marvel Team-Up, and as such, has all that fan service, from Easter eggs to little nods to other series and everything, that works extremely well. And it is an essential aspect to why the series does work so well. That fan service, again, it builds the world. It gives detail to character backstories, to the world you're in. It makes you believe in the story that you are watching in this play. Because essentially, that's what cartoons are. Cartoons are plays. They are skits. They are half-hour plays to where the status quo, you know, is always going to be returned to by the end of the episode. You know, there is maybe, you know, oh, we need to get the money for Aunt May's rent. And that may be a driving plot that's concluded by the end of the series. But to the most part, the main status quo of the series is always returned to at the end of each episode. That classic cartoon episodic plot. And the fan service is the verbs, the details, that enhances it and makes it good. And because of that, our third thing we'll talk about is the comedy of the series. And the comedy works very, very well in the series. It flows naturally. You know, again, I talked about, you know, Bobby Drake and Angelica Jones / Iceman and Firestar having this sort of comedy routine together where, you know, Firestar is the straight man, or in this case, straight woman, to, you know, Bobby Drake being, you know, the crazy one. And again, the classic quibs from Spider-Man, which come off as completely natural. And the quibbage of Spider-Man, which is very important to Spider-Man being good, was done extremely well. Props to Dan there for just an absolutely great job on that. All of that allows for a very natural story to come each episode. Again, that one issue is the pacing and the padding. And the fact that it just feels like... And maybe it's because it's an extra 20 minutes, you know. I've started watching the series I'm going to be reviewing Well, it's already next week, because I'm late getting this episode out. But the second episode that's going to come out this week, the next episode of Tom's Prerogative, is a more modern series. That episode is about 20 minutes each. These episodes were constantly running 25, so you had that extra 5 minutes that felt like eternity. It created this issue with the series that, again, it creates that pacing issue, that padding. So, at the end of the day, I feel Amazing Spider-Man is... I keep wanting to call him Amazing Spider-Man and his Amazing Friends. I don't know why. But Spider-Man and his Amazing Friends is a really, really well good series. And the fact is, it still holds up today. This was 1981, so 91, 2001. It's 30 years old. It's over 30 years old, for that matter. It's 33. Still holds up extremely well. The fact of the matter is, from what I've seen of Ultimate Spider... Which, by the way, is what it really should be called. It's Ultimate Spider-Man and his Amazing Friends. Because that's what the series is. It's Spider-Man and his Amazing Friends set in the Ultimate Universe. And I guess my issue is, like, I don't want the term Ultimate Spider-Man used in case they ever decide to do a sort of straight-up adaptation of Ultimate Spider-Man. They can use it, it just... people will complain, and I don't want people to complain, which is ignorant. But, you know, obviously, this is a very influential series. So influential that, since we were talking about Ultimate Comic World, you know, after the reboot of Ultimatum, which I know a lot of people didn't like, they basically set up a storyline that created an ultimate version in the comic of Spider-Man and his Amazing Friends, which was, you know, you had Bobby Drake, Iceman there, you actually had Johnny Storm, the Human Torch, who was originally supposed to be used in this program, which, again, that's how the creation of Firestar came about, is they wanted to use the Human Torch. They couldn't because of right issues, and because at that time, I believe it was owned by Fox, or someone else. I can't remember. And so they created Firestar because of that. But they had Human Torch, Johnny Storm. They had Bobby Drake, the Iceman. They didn't have Angelica Jones, but they made Liz Allen Firestar in a very creative way, connecting her mutant phobia and her to her actually becoming a mutant and revealing that her uncle is the Blob, and Kitty Pryde. So it was an extended Spider-Man and his Amazing Friends, but I love those stories. All those stories worked extremely well. Of course, you also had Gwen Stacy as a part of that team. No, she was living with Peter, and again, there's... this is not a comic book podcast. I could go on all day talking about that part of the Ultimate Spider-Man world, which I very much enjoyed. But I'm not. Just showing that it was obviously... this series was so influential, and it's still a very good series. I consider this series to be better than the current Spider-Man animation that's on now. And I know everybody says, like... it's that thing to where everybody jokes like, oh, everybody says that. Everybody says that. You know, everybody hates when a new Spider-Man series comes on, and they always say because the last one was so good. Well, in my regards, I've watched a lot of Spider-Man series. To me, the best is Spectacular Spider-Man. Second best, I think, is a tie between the 90s series and this series. Which, by the way, I did originally want to review the 90s series. I couldn't find it because why nobody has the original 90s series on Netflix or anything? It doesn't make sense. Every Spider-Man series can be found on the web except the 90s series. Why? I don't know. Somebody needs to get on that. So, final thoughts is it's a very good series. If I had to rate it, it would get a 4 out of 5. It's extremely well done. It's a great, I think, classic cartoon of the 80s and well worth checking out. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember, if you have any comments whatsoever, there are several ways to contact the show. One, you can contact us by our email account, which you can do at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also contact us on our new place of location. That is Stitcher. That's www.stitcher.com, I believe. I hope I'm saying it right. But we are now on Stitcher, which, you know, you can download onto your phone and everything. And we have a page up there with new episodes that you can find there. All episodes at a point will hopefully be up. I will get to work on that as soon as I can. It may have to start on that towards the end of towards the middle of the summer, as I'm very busy with cons and everything. But we will see. But yeah, you can find us on Stitcher. You can also find us on Facebook. Leave us a comment by going to www.facebook.com. Search for the Absolution Network. We're the one with the symbol of the circle and the A and the N in it, not the anime picture of it. Like us and leave us a comment there. And you can always leave a comment on the website itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Of course, remember to check out all the other 132 Productions content. That, of course, includes the Otaku Momentum and CMG's Wrestling Reviews, and some possible other ones coming down the pike at the Absolution Network. The Shaft Plus podcast that you can find at www.shaftplus.com with Gene and Chris. And, of course, my Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. Look out, because there will definitely be some stuff coming from that site in the coming weeks with the release this week of Godzilla. And, of course, my Comic Book Crazy podcast inside that features CM Dew's Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and Spectacular Webs, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And of course, remember to check out all our friends on the sidebar, the site that you can find, which of course includes Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box, along with From Crisis to Crisis that he does with Jeffrey Taylor, Brad Douglas' Spider-Man, Pearl Space, Steven Slater's Major Spoiler Podcast, and of course, Scott Gardner's 2-2 Breaks Podcasting Network. Along with many others on the sidebar of the site. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. I hope you enjoyed it. Next week, I may have another special guest. I may not. I'm hoping to get some people. Because next week, we go into the future. Because it's time to go beyond the normal realm of animation. Batman Beyond. It's finally time, as we review the Batman Beyond television series. So until next time, my Toonami generation, uncover. It's gonna get too stay golden. Here.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.